This is Radiohead. That's
Radiohead.
With your hosts, Christina Hoffman and Jimmy Vidica.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Radiohead Heads Radio.
I'm Christina.
And I'm Shime, and Happy New Year, I suppose. It's our first episode of 2021.
That is true. It is our first episode of technically the new millennium. No, sorry, new decade?
No, it's, yeah. You,
right, because the real decade starts on the one, right?
Yeah.
It does. So there you go. First of the new decade.
Yeah. It's not just a continuation of 2020. It's a new decade. It doesn't feel like it's the same thing.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Well, we have a jam-packed episode. We were just chatting before we started. So I think we got to get right into it and skip the pleasantries.
Yeah.
There is a gigantic news pile. I wouldn't say giant, but like pretty big news pile. Like not necessarily
a lot of shit going
like,
on.
Yeah, not like crazy big news, just like a lot of little scraps just flying around.
Yeah.
You were trying to catch and just, you know, catch them all with our fishnet and bring them to you as they come.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah,
the news net.
The news net. So first off, I mean, there's no real order here, but what I have first here is, so about, I guess this was a month ago or so. Let me double check this. Radiohead's one of their first demos from the 80s was sold at an auction.
I believe at a £6,000.
Yeah, which is I did the conversion. So for our American listeners and everyone else, that's $8,468. That's no pocket change there. That's a lot.
I mean,
lot
yeah,
of
but like
money.
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying it's not that much. It should be more. And I'm like,
No. It's a lot. It's a lot of money. For three. It's a three track, either three or four track.
List. I think it was three.
I can pull it up here. What's on there? It's pretty interesting because it's stuff that at least based off the names that are on there, the stuff we haven't heard before. It's Happy Song, To Be a Brilliant Light, and Sinking Ship.
My favorite Radiohead songs.
Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we never know. There could be stuff that was renamed later. But if you look at on this one website, MusicRadar.com, they have like images of the actual cassette and like the inlet. What do you call that? Inlet, inlay. The thing that's the paper that's in the liner notes, as it were.
Liner notes.
They have it's like there's like little like almost subtitles to the songs or whatever. It says Happy Song, why don't you write a happy song? To Be a Brilliant Light, it says Midlife Crises, and I can't read the rest. Something Comforts, is that what it says? I don't know. It's Tom's, you know, it's Tom's like crazy handwriting.
Right. It says Southern Comfort, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, Southern Comfort. Yeah, it's a song about just how great SoCo is in the summertime. And then Sinking Ships, it says, how would you like a job like this? I think it says. I can't see what it says there.
No.
So I'm wondering, you know, the big question is, will these show up online? Like, whoever bought these, will we hear
them? I don't
know.
I think these people are just like collectors, and it's like they're the like Martin Shkreli of themselves, you know? They just want to hold it so they can have it and no one else can have it.
Yeah, he's gonna put it like he or she. I'm not gonna assume I know the gender. This is probably a guy. They'll put it in like a little like display case, the cassette on a little like pedestal, probably in velvet.
Yeah.
They probably don't even, this person probably doesn't even have a tape player. you know,
Or they have like an ancient hi-fi set.
Yeah. Oh, it could be. Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I can imagine like a basement den with like still shag carpeting and like, yeah. And all their collection and
maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're out there, if you're listening, we'd love to talk to you. We'd love to ask you a few questions. wouldn't it be funny
Bill
just
Gates.
Like, yeah, it's definitely Bill Gates, with his vaccine money. Cause that's what he made money off of. That's how he became a billionaire. But yeah, it's just interesting that, And it was, I don't think it was for any charity or anything, was it? It was just, I'm trying
no,
to look and see.
No, just
was,
for greed.
Just, I believe just it was for just pure, for greed.
Well, because it was another.
Capitalism. Yeah.
Wasn't it another seller who was selling, or like another collector who was selling it?
I
believe.
Think so. I don't know. But the, well, but I forgot the, I forgot to say that the name of the demo is Gripe, which is
right.
a great
of
name
course.
For anything that Radiohead would ever release. Gripe. Like, what a fantastic
exactly.
name. But, and it has the, and it has, the, I guess the ladies on sax as well, which is really
yes,
cool.
Yes. And it doesn't have Johnny.
It doesn't?
What no, I read said it didn't.
You're at, oh no, it says John Greenwood on keys. Viola
yeah,
and Veronica.
I read two different articles that were very conflicting. So clearly I think the reporting on
sources.
This might be a little
we got,
like some of the song titles were different. And
oh,
then one
gosh.
Said that Johnny Greenwood was on it. So also it's like can you really tell that well? Like
yeah.
there it's just like kids on a tape, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Clearly I have low.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely correct. I would still love to hear it.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
And then speaking again of auction, there was another auction for something else, Radiohead related. It was mm-hmm. a sketchpad from the Benz era that
yeah.
has a lot of Tom. It's obviously Tom's, you know, sketchpad that sold for
yeah.
£5,000. Which is $7,056.
thank
and
you.
It,
thank you.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's we're American centric. We gotta bring everything mm-hmm. back to dollars. But there's
That's
like
true.
A great there's one picture of like it's literally the lyrics to Street Spirit, and it doesn't look like they're alternate lyrics. But it is the lyrics of Street. You can see it's Tom's little doodles and stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah.
What's
I honestly would maybe prefer this to the tape.
Yeah.
I think this
yeah,
would be cool to
yeah,
as like
because,
a piece to have, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's something like, yeah, because the tape is like, you can copy it, then hear it, then like, no, it no longer becomes kind of one of a kind. Whereas a sketch pad is kind of, you know, one of a kind to have it and to like look through it is like really special, I think, especially since it's Tom's sketchpad via, you know, from 1994.
Right.
What's interesting about when you read about what, how this person got this sketchpad is they were rehearsing for, you know, around the Benz period in this barn, and it was just left behind. And they said, you know, there were, this man was told that yeah you can whatever's left behind you can have it was this sketch pad with
yeah.
some carpeting so he wisely
well,
kept
I
the sketch pad
yeah
left
exactly
the
yeah I think they like you know assumed everything would be thrown away but
yeah
just kidding I'm
yeah
gonna keep
well,
it.
Well, it's also, you know, like you know they had
I don't think he was told that by the band. I think he might have been told that by like whoever
management
was like the
probably,
management
yeah
yeah,
yeah
like,
exactly
I don't know I feel like that wasn't an intentional band move
oh,
somehow
absolutely.
But I don't know maybe yeah
absolutely
but,
he says I was informed so like who informed
right.
him we don't know
yeah.
Well you know what the guy made a little bit extra money good for him and you know it's you yeah. know it's still pandemic he probably we all need it so I'm glad he made some
exactly.
money.
I know. I was like, someone's selling off all their shit. They need money.
Yeah. He's probably like, I'm never going to sell this, you know? And there's like, fuck it. What can I sell? What can I sell? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
kind
pretty
of.
Cool. You know, lucky him. And it'd be cool to see what else is in there, but who knows if we ever will.
Probably not.
Probably
unless
not.
Someone sells
no.
it again. unless
yeah,
that person
just,
sells it.
Yeah, which in that case, we'll do a GoFundMe to get to raise some
yeah,
money
exactly.
so we can buy it, or you know, someone can just gift it to us if you're a fan. Why don't you just gift it to us? Would be grateful.
Yeah.
We'll give you a shout out if you gift it to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. But you know,
I think there also that article said that a Collins bass from that period that he like used was also
oh yeah
was also
auctioned.
Yeah again, people who are unfortunately desperate for money and just...
Yeah, it's GoFundMe culture, yeah, except for rich people selling shit.
Yeah. This is a fun segue. Speaking of rich people, Johnny has been announced that he's scoring the Princess Diana movie.
Oh, yeah, Spencer.
Spencer, which is an interesting name for that. Like, I wouldn't hear, like, if I heard the title Spencer, I wouldn't immediately go to Princess Di. But again,
yeah, but also you would like usually see it on the poster with the big picture.
Exactly,
of Princess Di.
You wouldn't just be like going through like a book of like movies just like by the titles.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm very excited for the movie, especially because it's Pablo Larraín who did Jackie.
Yeah,
and he also did the Neruda. It wasn't really a biopic. It was more of a like mystery about from the point of view of a cop trying to catch Neruda when he was in exile. It's really good.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Gael Garcia Bernal plays the cop, and it's very sort of surreal. It's really interesting.
Of course, I mean it's Pablo Larraín. I've only seen Jackie, but like that's a very surreal like fever dream type movie. Yeah, which I love.
And his latest movie, His latest movie was on Mumi, and it's about like a young dancer in Chile.
What's it called?
So like his stuff is it's called Emma, EMA.
Oh, okay.
The woman's name, yeah.
Okay.
It's about like basically none of his movies are alike, so I'm very excited. for what he has to bring, and also Johnny has to bring to this, which I was very surprised
the score.
That this was announced.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like I guess he finished the score for the P.T. Anderson movie, or maybe he hasn't started that yet, or maybe he already did.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Who knows? It's all speculation. Because I was going to say, Spencer is supposed to come out like pretty soon.
Oh, so it's probably already done.
Yeah, but then again, I don't know. Yeah. I bet he did it before he did Soggy Bottom. Soggy, quote unquote, Soggy Bottom. If that's truly its name.
I hear that, and I makes me think that like the score for that is going to be real like country down home country like soundtrack with like a lot of like
Johnny's going to get his banjo out again
and like a lot of just like almost like Dukes of Hazzard type music. That's what I imagine for something called Soggy Bottom. I don't know why that's just like
totally
the first thing in my head. So I can't wait for that score. Johnny's Dukes of Hazzard score. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does for Princess Di. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. And especially because he hasn't worked with Pablo Larraín before.
Yeah.
So, like, I wonder what their, like, collaboration process.
Yeah.
Like, was a similar collaboration process, or it's like he gave him the movie and was like, write a score. You know?
I think this is a good segue into the other thing. There's this little Q&A with Johnny in the orchestra now,
I had not heard of.
Yeah, I don't never heard of it.
They're based at a, like, Bard College.
Ah, okay.
The orchestra itself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're based out of Bard College or the area around. I don't know.
So I guess people from this orchestra did a little Q&A with him. It's a very short Q&A. But they had asked, I think, about his collaboration. And he said, I don't imagine there are better. Well, the question was, you've scored many films directed by PTA. Are there any other directors in particular that you would like to work with someday? I was also wondering what your favorite film scores from the past decade are, which is something I wanted to bring up here. He says, I don't imagine there are better directors to work for than PTA and Lynn Ramsey, though I'm currently in the middle of scoring films for Jane Campion and Pablo Larraín.
Yeah.
And they're both really open-minded and collaborative in the best way.
Yes, he did say that. Yeah.
And then he said,
but the Jane Campion, that part's news.
Yeah. I guess we can look on IMDb and do a little investigating and see what her movie, what she has in production. We can
what's like in production? Yeah, yeah. I haven't when was the last movie she came out with? Like, I feel like she hasn't been like making films and I think of her more as like the 90s.
Yeah, it says here that a movie called The Power of the Dog is in post-production. And it's about a pair of brothers who own a large ranch in Montana are pitted against each other when one of them gets married.
And it's Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst, so it's Fargo season 2.
Yeah, yeah, basically in Montana.
That's amazing.
With Benedict Cumberbatch. We got Keith Carradine. Wow, what a cast.
And oh my god, exciting. Squanto himself, Adam Beach, is in it.
Wait,
did you ever watch Squanto?
No.
He's a Native American. Adam Beach is a Native American actor.
Awesome.
Squanto was like some, I don't know, he was always on Disney. Look at it. Okay. Great. Some good shit. It was like one of the few things where it's like he's the hero of the story in like a movie.
Oh, fantastic.
From like the 90s, you know? Like
that's wow.
It must be this then. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be. That's the only thing she
must
has.
Be this.
That's cool. I wonder if it's gonna be like, since it's like very it looks like it's Montana, like set. I don't know. It doesn't say what time period it's set in.
No, but, who knows? But
there are some pictures, and it looks like it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's definitely
no,
this.
It's
He's credited.
Yeah, it's definitely a period piece. So I'm wondering if it's gonna be like similar, like There Will Be Blood esque kind of like music, and I don't know.
Listen, who knows? Could who be knows? Anything.
So that's I didn't even realize that even reading the article I kind of like skipped over that like Jane Campion. I was like whatever. I was just
skipping over Jane Campion. Wow.
I mean, sorry. Yeah. Well,
she's,
you know,
she's a classic.
I know. This should be interesting. And then the best part though of this is he says the best score in the last 10 years. The score to Midsummer was very underrated, not least because I love recorders. He said.
I was like, of course that's why you like it. Of yeah. course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But
totally.
But yeah, I mean, well, because it's like, Jesus, what's his face? It's the Haxan Cloak, right?
I don't know.
The guy who performs under the moniker of the Haxan Cloak. Why am I like not remembering this right now? Do you know the Haxan Cloak? Yeah, Bobby Kierlik. He does. Just like really dark, weird shit in his name is the Haxan Cloak, and Haxan is like witch in German. There's an old like 1920s movie called Haxan. So like very like that. That's the vibe of his music. So when I saw that he had been when he was going to do the music for Midsommar, I was like, and
of
yep,
course,
all this makes sense. And yeah. Let's go.
Let's go.
but I love that he singled. Yeah, I love that he singled that out though, because there's been so many amazing scores, but like specifically Midsommar. For the recorders.
Yeah, for the recorders. You know, just put some recorders in your score and Johnny's going to love it. Anyone out there who wants to get Johnny's attention with the score. Any aspiring composers. I also love that he said like the whole thing about the solo instrument thing, like a flute player.
Writing music for flute?
Well, yeah, the fact that he was going to write a piece that is played in one breath, which is really cool.
Speaking as a former flute player, I don't understand, but sure.
Yeah. I can imagine how
but
long
that
piece
you know, that's,
would be.
That's for Johnny to know and me to find out.
Yeah.
As he says, he had forgotten about it, and he's like, thanks for reminding me.
And he probably went and wrote it that night, and we'll hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it will premiere. Maybe it'll be part of a... Maybe they gave him the idea to, like, for one of his scores, it's going to be like this the flute piece that's going to be like one note for five
minutes.
Just
a bunch of short flute pieces.
Yeah.
Well, did you watch the video of the of them performing Popcorn Superhit Receiver, which is why they were interviewing him?
No, I don't think I did.
I found it on YouTube. It's okay. I was mostly just interested to see because it had been live streamed during COVID. And I was interested to see how they did that.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, oh, right. When I found the video, I was like, oh, right. It's all strings. And so everyone's got a mask on and they're seated like very spaced out.
Did you see that? Like,
so I was like, okay, that makes sense. But
Did you see that? Like, it was like a meme or something, or I saw it on Twitter. It was like this like school in like Washington, like all the band class. It's like they're all in these like little tents, and the kid in the tuba was like in the little tent.
Yeah, the green pod things.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh my god, ridiculous.
Yeah,
pods.
Glad it's not.
That's our... Yeah. But yeah, but it was a nice nice short little Q&A with Johnny.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was just nice to see like young musicians talking to him and being like, "Hey,
yeah,
you're an inspiration.
Hey,
we're playing a piece." I'm like, frankly, surprised they got an interview with him because I'm like, "Who is these people?" It's like Bard College's band. It's not really. I'm sure they're legitimate, but I just had not heard of them before. So I was like, "That's cool that they were able to speak with him." You know?
Yeah, I mean, what else has he got going on?
That's right? true. That is true.
So some other little bits of news. Tom has been he did a DJ, I put in quotes, DJ set, because that's basically what it is, on BBC Six. Yeah. Which is really
they do
is
those
cool.
like guest they do guest slots all the yeah. time. It's so mm-hmm. funny because I like follow, I don't know who I follow, but like it'll be like just like people you would never guess. It's like, oh, this actor is doing like a random DJ set on Sunday noon BBC Six, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. And they always just play
Ian
whatever
McKellen.
The hell they want. I wish. I don't know if he's done that, but you know. But yeah, this was a cool. It was a cool yeah. set. I really enjoyed
Very cool.
it.
And it was, yeah, and it wasn't just him just playing songs. He actually like that's why I said DJ set. It felt like, you know, he was like doing transition songs, actually DJing. You know, it was really cool.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
With the stuff.
Yeah, and he put the kit from Twist over
yes.
one of the songs.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. Like he like put it like so yeah. he like put himself in there, which is really cool. I forget which song yeah. it was. I wrote. Yeah, and I thought, and I wrote this down, but I went back and tried to find it, and I don't know if it's sure. I thought he, I heard the climbing up the walls from the white tape.
Yeah, you
I
did.
Don't. It was okay. I was trying to find it again.
Yeah, it was like the kid. Yeah, it was like the different. Yeah, like the I'm the key to the lock yeah. in your house,
oh, okay.
like that. But yeah. it was not those words. It was like from that thing. It was definitely from the white tape.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Couldn't tell you where it was. I did not write down the timestamp, yeah. but it was. It's somewhere yeah. in there. It's a treasure.
Yeah.
You'll
yeah.
find it if you listen to it.
Yeah, that's fun. Just like listen to it. And yeah, and he yeah. Some of the he plays like Mark Pritchard, and like Q-Tip was really cool yeah. at the end. It was really,
I love that it ended with Q-Tip. That was fun.
Yeah, it's a very good track. I like that.
And a lot of different genres. I'm not surprising, yeah. but like
of course
you know with the fall and then like that raga, yeah. that instrumental raga.
Yeah,
and then, yeah, it was wild. I enjoyed it.
And then he played the stuff he played, like the Death Is Not the End. It was these old pirate radio advertisements, which
yes,
is really cool.
That was so cool. I enjoyed yeah. that a lot.
Yeah. It was very, very yeah. cool. Tom always finds he you know has the access and the time, whatever, I'm sure, to find these really cool things that yeah. that pique his interest and sound really cool together. Yeah, it's still check it out if you haven't. BBC, you can go to bbc.co.uk and you can find it. It's the
yeah, it's on BBC Six Radio.
Yeah, you can find it. His on Marianne Hobbs' show. He was the, yeah. the he did his guest mix. It's very cool.
Yeah.
And also, speaking of Tom, like putting together music, have you listened to any of his playlists he did for Sonos Radio in the absence?
Oh
thereof?
Yeah. In the absence thereof. Have we not talked about these yet?
No, we really haven't. There's four of them. And I, because yeah. I really hadn't listened to them until recently, like fully, like all of them. Like, yeah. wow, there's very, speaking of eclectic, like my favorite yeah. is, I think it's the, let me see. No, it's not the fourth one. There's one that's like super, like all over the place. Let me see if I can find
it. I think they all are.
Yes. But it's the third one. It has, I mean, you got, I mean, you could just go around. You have like the Kukuru's Quartet, and then like Nicki Minaj.
Oh, and Chun Li, my Nicki Minaj. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like all over.
But
the
also,
place.
Oh, I forgot that this is what got me into Armand Hammer, the rapper. I forgot it was from it was the first song that's on here. Rehearsed with Ornette. I heard it and I was like, holy shit, what is this? It reminded me of like Dean Blunt or like I don't even know. Uh-huh. It's amazing. So yeah, I totally got into their albums after that.
Yeah,
but,
it's yeah. a really, like, if you haven't heard them, they're on Spotify, all of them. It's really, again, like I've only going through this, I've maybe heard one or two songs ever before in my life, and maybe I've heard of like a three artists. Like the only yeah. song I think maybe I've heard before is the Low song. From the fourth volume,
yes,
Dancing in Blood, which is
yeah, that's a great song actually. Yeah. The funny thing is, I had forgotten about that song, and it came up, and I was like,
yeah.
But no, I liked the fourth one had so much old movie scores.
Yes,
like
I was going to talk about
Bernard
that, yeah.
Herrmann and Penderecki, yes. and like
yeah,
that was super cool, and in Morricone as well. But yeah, out of like when I looked at the track list, I only recognized yeah. Cindy Lee and Yeji.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Well, and Low, but yeah.
Yeah, it's
and
a
Mark
really
Richard,
like
I guess, but
it's
you know,
really cool. That I think the fourth one, I think, has this, like, with all the old movie scores and like some of the stuff, it kind of has this really, really nice sort of theme throughout, like, of this old, like, I can't describe it. Definitely has a feeling and a mood and a vibe, as a youngster say.
That's true.
The fourth one, it's really well put together. I really like it. Yeah. Going from like Bernard Herrmann to like this Heat and, you know, and then Low, it's like, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, I was like, I remember with the first couple of ones, I was very like, felt very vindicated, not vindicated, but I was like, you know, it's interesting to see. You're like, Tom York likes Toe Cutter Thumbbuster by the OCs, which is like one of my favorite songs of all time. And there's like, and then he put The Pier and the Damned from the end of Good Time on there, but like into a track from Hereditary, and I was like, you're fucked up, man. but like The Pier and the Damned is the song that Iggy Pop sings with One of Tricks by Never, and it's like so fucking beautiful. And then on like another one, the fact that he put JPEG Mafia on there, I was like, ha! I don't know, it was just like little things where I was like, I'm glad that you like them, you know.
When I feel
vindicated in my own choices.
Yeah, when I saw the OCs, I'm like, Christina really is gonna love this. She's gonna be happy about this.
And James Blake was like, I think on every single one.
It's very
Maybe just the first three. But it's definitely. I hope he keeps doing them.
Yeah, it's some cool stuff. And it, but also like seeing like when you see Penderecki, I'm like, oh, someone has been influenced by Johnny. I was like, yeah, this is totally.
Yeah, but Johnny, also isn't that Johnny from like joint. That's like the really famous one, isn't that one he puts? It's from Victims of Hiroshima, right?
Yeah, that's a really
famous one. It's not it's not like an abstract one. That's the one that's like in Twin Peaks and other things.
But when I hear,
he was just watching Twin Peaks.
That's true. But when I hear that, like, I was like, oh yeah, this is Johnny, like 100%, like Johnny's Johnny's jam, puts on to chill out on a Sunday evening.
Exactly.
He puts on some Penderecki. I've listened to this this playlist while working. I'm like, yeah, there's nothing like listening to Penderecki while doing some spreadsheets.
wow.
It really gets you going.
That's bleak.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm like, oh, cool, Hereditary soundtrack.
Sick.
Whereas that is so abstract. I'm actually, frankly, it's just because Hereditary and Midsommar say both Ari Aster. I would like to see what Johnny's opinion on the Hereditary score is, because I'd say far more abstract and like Johnny-ish than Midsommar actually, because Midsommar is so melodic.
He just likes it because the recording has nothing to do with
I think so. But it'd be interesting to hear what he says about that.
So going on to a different member of the band, we have Colin Greenwood wrote an article in The Guardian about Brexit and touring in Europe. Obviously not a happy article, he has some great little memories in the beginning of them touring. Sure. My favorite though is he says in 1995 at the tiny Café de la Danse in Paris, Diana Ross was there. It's like, what?
She was Madame Ross to us.
Yes,
as he
interjects himself. Yes, of course.
But also Françoise Hardy, I was like, I didn't even know she was still alive.
I don't know who that is.
She's a famous French pop singer. You would have heard her music in a lot of movies.
I think
her music is in a lot of Moonrise Kingdom. I just like had no idea that she. I don't know if she is alive. And just like it was like two different musical worlds being like, what? You coexist in the same world, but anyway.
And she was just. Yeah, just imagine Diana Ross just like grooving to like My Iron Lung, like
in Belgium.
Yeah,
or was that in Belgium or no? That was one of those.
France, It was in France. Yeah. But no, it paints obviously a bleak future for touring in Europe and for, you know, smaller artists who don't have the money and to figure out how to tour in Europe, which is very sad.
There's a lot of reasons
why Brexit sucks, but.
A lot. Well, but I like that it's really an appeal for them to renegotiate things with music and or with touring essentially.
For the performance parts. Yeah,
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, because, and I was just thinking, like, how difficult it would be for American musicians to have to tour, one touring the U.S., just geographically. Yeah. Like, I understand it's, like, different countries, different cultures, but just in terms of distance, having to cover that much space, and then also having to deal with all that bullshit in between.
Yeah.
And even with Radiohead, Colin Greenwood was saying, like, it's fucking stupid, but we'll figure it out. But it sucks that they have to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, it sucks for, like, the artists who can't afford to, but it also sucks for Radiohead, like, that, like, why put anyone through this bullshit, you know?
Yeah, I have a feeling, because we're still in the middle of the pandemic and there is no touring, I bet that's why they're not reconsidering, because no one's even touring. So once they hopefully, we get back to touring, maybe they will, because there'll be a lot more people, like, we need to do something about this. Right now, there's no one touring, so it's like, whatever, who cares right now? There's other things that are more important, like getting the vaccine out, et cetera. I think it's just crazy. It's just crazy. That's like, it's like they're trying to say we're not a part of Europe, and like Europe is right there, and that's like so many these artists, that's how they make their money, they go and tour and throughout Europe. The mainland.
Exactly. Europe. And like noting that, like, you know, some random cellist, she might end up getting charged more than she's actually paid for a small gig. Yeah. Like, crazy. Make that make sense.
That's nuts.
Like,
what? That's nuts.
But reading this, I was like, man, I want like Colin Greenwood to write a book or something. I really enjoyed his writing.
I did.
And
too.
I was like, I know.
Was gonna say that too.
Wasn't it Phil who like wanted to be like the great novelist?
Oh yeah.
but I was thinking about that, and I was like, no, I don't know. Colin. I think Colin. Maybe Colin's never gonna have a solo album, but he's gonna write.
I think he's gonna write a novel, and I think also I want him to
about a lonely bassist.
Yeah,
whatever. Not that Colin's lonely. I don't know. I just thought of that.
Well, no, you know, a magical realism novel about a lonely bassist, and like
a magical bass.
Magical bass that like gives him powers. Colin, this one's for free. Take it. You can take it.
Wow.
But I also think he should write. I would love if he wrote memoirs, you know, a memoir.
Yes,
like, about his
that's
life.
True.
That'd be so cool.
His story about Tamino, like, did you hear about this before this article?
I mean, I didn't know he was touring with this guy. Like, he was doing
this
with this guy.
I had no idea. I mean, I guess it was only a couple shows, but the fact that he just, like, went with this artist and was like, I'm going to hop on the train and play bass for this guy because I like him. Like, that's amazing. And I just love that. I mean, I don't love that I didn't know about this, but I'm like, I love that he could just do that, you know, like, or could just do that.
And now no longer. That's what he's saying. It's like he had this freedom and this and they're just like this cult, you know, he wants to support these young artists around Europe. Yeah. And I mean, not that there's no artists in England. I mean, they can still do that in England and the UK, but you know.
Yeah, it's just limiting. It's just incredibly limiting.
Yeah.
As is all of Brexit. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That's our official stance on Brexit.
On Brexit, yeah. Basically.
And all those and Boris Johnson in general. Okie doke. Speaking of things that travel, ooh, this is a great segue.
I think I know what I was like. He's going to do this. What is it?
The Van Gogh exhibit.
Yes, I fucking knew it.
So where did it start? I mean, I probably bring up the article, but it started. I know it was in Toronto.
It said it was in
Chicago.
Like Toronto and Paris. Yeah.
Yes, Paris.
I don't think it said like exactly.
So it's a really cool looking, sort of immersive Van Gogh exhibit
with like projections and 3D.
Yeah. Check out the pictures if you haven't seen the pictures. But it's coming to New York. But not only that, but apparently there's a Thom Yorke, at least one Thom Yorke track, and there's no. Like,
I believe
info,
it's
like,
one.
And we don't.
I assumed
know
it was
one.
Like an. I assumed it was like new, but maybe I could be wrong. That he had composed it for it.
So it's already available for pre-order in New York City. Have you gotten a ticket?
No, I will. I'm going to actually. Like I have to go to this. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but I'm gonna wait. Like, man, wait a little bit to see how everything like shakes out with the pandemic. I am actually getting. Yeah. I am getting my first dose of my vaccine next week.
Oh, nice.
So that does. That is exciting, but yeah. I'm still waiting to see.
It just sucks because, yeah, I mean, it opens June 10, but yeah. If tickets are on sale already, I feel like they're going to be sold out pretty quickly.
Last time I checked, they weren't, but that was a few days ago. Because yeah, I do think that people, I mean, for the most part,
are
like,
scared.
I don't know. I'm not just scared. Like, what is the future going to hold? You know, it's so unsure. Yeah. You know,
it's
like,
true. Yeah, especially if you're buying a timed ticket.
Yeah.
Months in advance, you know. Yeah. Like I've gone to. Well, I went to one museum. Mm. I've meant to go to other ones. I went to the Natural History Museum.
That's right. I think
not that many people there. Yeah.
That's great.
But you know, it's like there's not that many people there, and everyone's wearing a mask and whatever.
That's great.
So like that part of it. And also, especially that it's timed. I think every museum now has timed entry. Yeah, like I went to the Botanic Garden; they have timed entry.
Oh,
like,
that's outside. Though. That's even easier.
And that's outside. Yeah. But just in terms of like regulating how many people are in, and
that's good.
People wearing
and
masks.
And obviously, like, they have to wear masks. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
And you think about it.
But
yeah. But you also
it's more
think
just
about,
yeah. Like, it's the advanced thing.
Yeah. But also, you think about it. How many people are talking during like a museum exhibit? There's not a lot of people talking, so it seems safe. You know, people are just going, you know, shaking their heads and looking at stuff.
That's true.
So it's relatively safe in that respect.
But is this the kind of thing that they would have headphones? You know, for like the personalized experience, where you're going to have to like sanitize your headphones? Or maybe you can use your own headphones.
You know what a lot of museums
like
do? They do like, an app and you use your own
headphones.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I think.
So then even more, there probably wouldn't be people talking because you just have your own like immersion going on.
Hell
yeah. I know, it's like so
safe as heck.
I guess, yeah, like. I don't know. I really want to go though. I'm glad I'm looking into it.
That's exciting. Yeah. I'm curious to see what Tom York track, if it's a new track, if it's an old track.
Yeah
we shall see.
I think I'm very excited to watch that, or to exhibit it, or whatever. Let's immerse myself in it.
Let's hope his song isn't during the Potato Eaters. Let's.
No, they're gonna do the famous artist song during like a famous painting or something.
Yeah, like Starry Night or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what I wanted to say about this is: have you ever seen Kurosawa's Dreams? It's a series of short films by Kurosawa.
No.
I watched this in fucking high school from the video store with my friend when we were being like, you know, pretentious. And it's super amazing. Some of them are horrifying. You know, nightmares. Oh. But there's one where Martin Scorsese is in it. He directs Martin Scorsese going into Van Gogh paintings. And I truly think that the exhibit could have been inspired by that dream, that short film in the sequence.
Possible.
It's
possible.
Wild. And I actually didn't remember that it was Martin Scorsese until I like was looking into this the other day.
Then you saw it, and then his big old eyebrows. Oh, look at his painting. Let's go inside. That's my Martin Scorsese impression.
But yeah, I mean, it's at least watch that one. I bet you could find it somewhere. But
cool.
Some of them are really
very
scary,
cool.
Like nuclear fallout shit with like monsters moaning and wailing. I was traumatized by it. But anyway, that was the first thing I thought of when I saw this exhibit was the Kurosawa film. But yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, well, I guess here's my turn to do a segue. Speaking from other countries.
There we go. Nice job.
Polish dance company.
Nice job.
There was a Polish dance company. Thank you. Thank you. that they did. I wouldn't say it was a ballet.
No,
it was a ballet company that did
a more modern dance
to Reckoner, which I thought was really lovely.
So good. Christina, I had goosebumps.
And I'm interested to see more of them, but that was the only one that was available. But apparently, like, there was like a whole thing with a bunch of different Radiohead songs. But,
oh, really? Oh, that was the only video
just
that
didn't
was
have the.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it had been like taken, like live streamed and then taken down. Yeah. But yeah, it was the Polish National Ballet.
So good. Yeah, and it was just really two dancers. It was two dancers, and like, let me tell you, the female dancer was like, some of the stuff she did, I was just like, my jaw dropped at certain points. Like what she did with her body and stuff was unbelievable. Some of the moves she did, crazy. Yeah.
It was funny. I thought that this might have also been a quarantine thing, but no, it's from like 3 years ago.
Okay, that's
I was like,
that's
how are they dancing?
Yeah, and the fact that there was a pause at the end, I was like, whoa, oh shit, there's a bunch of people. Yeah. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Poland.
But yeah, it's from
doing?
Like 2017, okay. I believe. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I thought that was really beautiful. Yeah. But yeah, you can look it up. It's the Polish National Ballet. But the Reckoner piece is the only one that's available online to watch, as far as we know.
It's on YouTube.
It was really, really lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some great moments. Like, there's one moments where, like, I guess when he starts, there's one moment where he just, like, there's a lot of movement, and then he, like, just grabs her and holds her, and she just stops moving. It's really stunning. I just remember this one. Yeah. And then I like how it ends. He just, like, walks away. Oh, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost laughed, actually, when he just walked away.
Like, hey. Take me with you. You're supposed to, that's what the song says.
Wow. Damn. Didn't think about that.
Yeah. It really, this, Christina, it really makes you think. this dance with that song. But really more dances to radio songs, please. Excuse me.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
This reminds me now, we should go into our little news segment. I would say we haven't decided on a name. We've thrown around a few names.
If it isn't covers, then
yeah. I thought
if it isn't cover, why do I feel this way?
Yeah, I thought we could do, since we're in quarantine, cover teen. Is that too weird? Is that too obtuse? Cover teen, quarantine. Nah.
Cover teen sounds like some sort of weird like Ovaltine.
Yeah.
Or, I don't okay. know. Some weird like food, or like Marmite, like some weird food that like
for,
no
like,
one
old
understands.
People, like cover teen.
Yeah,
for, like,
exactly.
Grandpa loves his cover teen.
Exactly.
But exactly. Well, there's one that I wanted to surprise you with, because I think I want to do it now because it's a good segue from what we just talked about. I'm going to share a screen real quick to show you. This is, oh boy, Christina, just you wait. I should.
But I'm already so afraid.
It's Peter Frampton's Reckoner. Hold on. Just watch the video, because it's like someone just learned how to use iMovie. It's funny you watching it with that sound.
I didn't know Peter Frampton was still making music.
Yeah,
me too. This is like a fake. This is like a fake music video, like from like a parody. Especially with that sound.
Yeah. Well, the listeners can hear
is
this.
He in sound. Like a vampire's castle. Yeah. You will be hearing this, listeners, and I will hear it later. But
there's one part
actually,
I want you
I
to
think,
see
even more entertaining with that sound.
Yeah, there's one part I want you to see. We won't watch the whole thing, but there's one part I want you to see. There's a lot of it's just like ham-fisted symbolism. But this is the part I want you to see.
What?
He's in a. He takes a book from a bookshelf. Wait for it.
Oh my God.
The book just says Faust.
And there's dangling mandala necklace. Over.
Yeah, well, it's like a ring. I think it's a ring. Watch the rest. It's like, and then one point he tears it. He tears it and throws it. It's an instrumental cover. So he's, let me stop share screen. It's an instrumental cover, just him doing the lead, you know, just the lead is Tom's, you know, vocal melody. And then
he
goes off a little bit. No, the whole thing is just instrumental. It's just him doing the lead as Tom voice. Then like one point he kind of goes into some dad sort of noodling, dad rock noodling. It's like,
I don't want
Peter.
That.
But the music video is like, Peter, there's no one, you have no one around you to tell you this is. I guess no one says no to Peter. I have a feeling it was like his grandson was like, Dad, like the grandpa, I have an idea for this cool music video.
And or like, sure. He was bored as hell during lockdown.
Yeah. I think it's both. But
I'm going to teach myself iMovie.
Yeah. It's a fine cover. It's like whatever. It's like an easy listening version.
Oof, love to listen easily.
Yeah.
Damn.
Well, but
that was bizarre.
But there's the other. What's really crazy is that in the recent few weeks or whatever, there's been two Everything in Its Right Place covers, which is weird.
Yeah.
By two artists, two young artists. One by Julian Baker, who I love, who's really great. I've mentioned her on this show before. Her cover is it's at first I was like, oh, this is really good, but then there was another cover that literally came out a few hours before we started recording.
It's better.
It's much better. Madison McFerrin.
Melissa McFerrin? Madison McFerrin.
Madison.
As soon as I was like, haven't we talked about her before? But I'm wondering if I was like watching her do something else. Because I remember talking about like, oh, Bobby McFerrin's daughter.
Oh, is that who I didn't realize that's who she was. Okay.
Yeah. You didn't immediately see a McFerrin doing a cappella and it'd be like, is she related to Bobby McFerrin? Bobby McFerrin was very, very big in my childhood. Okay.
Sorry, wasn't in my
Don't worry, be happy.
Got it. Okay.
I think they would play that song at the Giants games anytime they lost. Like, it would be like leaving the stadium and it was like, don't worry, be happy.
That's great. I had no idea. That's so funny. Okay. It makes a lot of sense now, Christina. Thank you. But her cover is real. Wait, should we play a little bit of it? Should I? I guess I can.
Sure, but is the sound going to work?
Here we go. She's making the chords. It's amazing. With her voice.
Yeah.
She's got this big old like loop mechanism to do this, to loop her voice live.
Yeah, her equipment looks awesome.
Yeah. She's got a great voice, obviously. There we go. But check the rest of it out. It's really cool. It was on Pitchfork. They did a little article on it. And if you look her up, Madison McFerrin, she's doing it. She did it for, this is for the Loveland Foundation, which is a great foundation, nonprofit organization. But it's also Sounds of Saving partnered with the Loveland Foundation.
Sounds of Saving?
Yes, Sounds of Satan. We know.
So today.
Sorry, Sounds
saving,
of Saving.
Saving, yes.
Sorry. check. It's really cool. Like when the song really builds, when she has all the voices come in, it's very like intense and like overwhelming, but like a really cool way.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool take on Everything's Right Place. Whereas Julian Baker just did the song as they do it, just with her voice, basically.
Yeah. It's slightly slower. Like barely. Just like a turn down the dial of the metronome, like stuff.
Faster, Johnny. Faster, Julian.
Yeah, I was actually at first I was like, oh, she's just doing the same thing, but I did actually enjoy it. I guess it's just because it's a good song.
Yeah,
you know, and
no,
she's
absolutely.
Talented.
No,
but
yeah, no.
But then as soon as I heard Madison McFerrin's, I was like, oh, that's
this
incredibly
is superior,
10 times better.
Yeah. But I think Julian Baker did hers also live as well. That's what also I think makes it really cool.
It was for like a radio show, I believe.
Yeah. So When you hear that, and you're like, "Oh, that's very impressive as well." She's doing exactly what radio, like the voice sampling that Radiohead does live, and she's doing it.
Oh,
herself.
That's what you meant, doing it live. Yes, yeah, that yeah. also. I meant like it was for a radio show, but yes,
yeah, yeah.
creating
yeah.
the loops and the sounds live. Yeah, yeah
exactly.
Yeah, I feel like that's exactly. kind of necessary for everything in its right place. In its right place.
Yeah.
Unless you're,
yeah.
you're doing a completely different take on it.
Exactly.
If you're
yeah.
just like
Unless
doing
you're...
it on guitar or whatever.
Or like John Mayer or something.
Piano.
He did. He did Kid A. Hey.
I know.
So
anyway, let's move on from John Mayer.
Yeah. yeah. So I think yeah, is that that's I think a good like little foray into the covers. There's always gonna be someone's covering Radiohead. That's just the lay
oh,
of the
yeah.
land.
Always. Yeah.
So let's get into what this episode is all about, shall we? It is the 10th
oh, yeah.
anniversary of the very controversial, mysterious, et cetera, album, The King of Limbs, 2011. Good
yeah.
Lord. Good it's Lord.
Wild. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. part of... Oh, yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask you, like, what do you remember your first initial reaction to it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I remember I was walking around in, mm-hmm. and it was weirdly warm that night.
Yes.
It was like a weird,
yeah.
I was like coming back and it was weirdly warm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was still snow on the ground maybe, or maybe, uh-huh. I don't know, maybe I'm making the snow up, but it, like whatever it was like, what's going on? Like this feels yeah. very surreal. And I was walking mm-hmm. around in like a very sort of
yeah
like abandoned area and, it fit really well. And then I went to yeah. my friend's bar and he was playing it and everyone just
oh, wow.
was kind of sitting at the bar, just like listening to it. So that's like my main association I have.
That's interesting.
I have with it. And I was always very positive on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's actually interesting going back and reading how it was actually yeah. generally well received when it came
yeah.
out. It only became yeah. kind of controversial after that.
Yeah.
But I also definitely fell into the rabbit hole, not the rabbit hole, but I fell into the sort of like, there's a second album dropping.
Yep.
This
yep.
isn't it. Because that was the thing is it was short. It was as
yeah.
short as hell.
37 minutes. That's it.
Yeah. That's like that's an EP. Come on, guess.
Yeah, exactly. that's exact. That was like my thought. Like my initial reaction. Like while I was like, "Oh, there's some good stuff here." I was like, when it ended, I was like, "That's it." That was my. I remember
yeah.
my. I'll never forget because I think I was. I remember like it was the morning, and like you said, it was. I was inside, but I just remember sunshine, because it was especially warm in February, and I remember listening to it by myself in the bedroom and being like, "That's it."
Oh. Yeah. You know, what I'm thinking of, I guess, is then that must have not been the first time I listened to it. Because I must have listened to it early in the morning, but that was at night when I was walking. So I wonder
okay.
if that was just, that must have just been like, I think maybe I went to work that day. Like I listened to it before work, left work, and was like going somewhere and walking, listening to it at night. And that's when it really resonated.
Yeah.
It was
yeah,
in
yeah.
that sort of like weirdly warm winter night.
Yeah.
Which I think really fits.
Oh, absolutely. That's that's a really great,
yeah.
like,
a weirdly warm winter night. Yeah.
That's a great description of the album, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Every single word, weirdly warm winter night.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was definitely, like you said, on that same thing, like, oh, there's got to be more because, like you said, it was so short and there's all those rumors, especially with the lyric,
if you think it's over, then you're wrong.
Yeah, it's just like really, like looking back, do you really think that he would put that in there as like as a meta narrative on like what's coming? But that's Radiohead.
It probably.
You,
like, oh, like the fact that people read into it too much.
Yeah. That's Radiohead fans.
Sure.
You know,
I'm sure
that,
it meant
that's
something else.
Yeah, it's completely something we completely don't
he's
even
like,
we'll never we'll
talking
never know.
About like dinner.
Yeah. It's like there's another course coming.
But it made me also think of when Kendrick Lamar's Damn came out, there was a similar sort of mythology about it that there was gonna be a second half that dropped like the next weekend because there was stuff with like Damn and also the album is structured it's sort of like the end is the beginning. It plays the beginning backwards, and he says the same thing at the beginning and the end. And then he said the album was really supposed to be from the back to the front. And so people thought there was going to be like a reverse album, and that was like heaven, like damn it. And then also because like the following weekend was Easter Sunday, I think. So it just
There's a lot of signs.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But you know, obviously also did not happen, but it's just interesting how people get tied in. Actually, one of the articles I found on sort of reevaluating it, referred to it as, one piece in a Pepe Sylvia-esque web of clues that an amnesiac sibling was waiting just around the corner. But Pepe Sylvia, it's like, if you're not familiar, it's the Charlie meme from It's Always Sunny, where he's pointing to the conspiracy on the wall.
That's good.
Oh, wow. I was saying that for the benefit of listeners. I didn't realize I was saying that for the benefit of you. Pepe Sylvia.
Christina,
there's a conspiracy in the mailroom.
Assume that I don't know anything. No, but yes, I remember that episode. I just forgot the name. That's very funny.
Right. When I first saw Pepe, I was like, Pepe the Frog? And then I was like, Pepe Sylvia, of course. Yeah. He doesn't exist. There is no Pepe Sylvia. Okay, anyway.
But it's true though. Like if you look at like Radiohead's like their sort of releases and how they interact with fans, we've talked about this before. The puzzles and the mystery is all intertwined with the albums, and like that's not a weird thing to think when you really think about it.
Exactly,
there could be something else. Yeah. But
and there was something else, kind of.
There were four other songs.
There was a whole lot of singles.
Yeah.
And the King of Limbs live from the basement.
Yeah. It is when you look at a lot of like how a lot of fans obviously felt about it. Like we were saying, generally well received, but too short, felt a little, sometimes some people say it was a little cold and a little off. But then when from the basement, like you're saying, I would say even myself and a lot of fans, that is kind of the more definitive representation
version?
Of the album. Version. Yes. I couldn't think of the word. Version of that, of those songs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I was looking at, when I was looking at a lot of the like sort of reinterpretation, there was like that camp that I was like, they only found it live. Yeah. And then there was also, I guess also within that, there was like, there's the front half people and the back half people.
And also,
I didn't realize how controversial Farrell is. Like, some reviewers hate Farrell. Yeah. And some reviewers of it as the most representative of, like, the movement they were trying to make.
Absolutely.
In terms of, like, being influenced by Burial and Flying Lotus. And the sort of way that music was moving at that time.
Yeah.
But I think it was, some article I read, this is great that I cannot find it, basically saying that, like, they were, with Farrell, they were moving in a direction that music was going in at the time, but then didn't last for very long.
Yeah.
In terms of like that sort of, I guess, and it sort of connects to the way that like when dubstep first came out with a very British dub sound.
Yes. Yeah.
And then it got completely taken over and ruined by mostly American artists. And then killed it, basically. It died. So like that sort of direction just didn't really happen. And so, I think that's why a lot of the people who are not fans of the Farrells or the first halves or whatever.
Yeah.
It's because they were not listening to like Mount Kimby or like, you know, Fortet, you know?
Yeah.
And so they didn't like, that's not like the trail that they were on, you know? And then the trail didn't go anywhere. So it's not like they could have appreciated it later.
I don't know where this is from. I just took a bunch of quotes, and it says, "The essence of The King of Limbs was always meant to be a live rock band adaptation of 2000s era minimalist techno and downtempo." Maybe not techno, but that sort of thing, a live rock band adaptation of those styles, like you said, like the British dubstep, etc.
Yeah,
is exactly what the, and then like you, and that's why Farrell, like, is a good example and should be on the album if that's what they're trying to do, to show like, hey, this is what this album is.
Right. You know? And there was a lot of people who were like, well, if I was going to redo this album, I would leave Feral off.
Hell no.
Including this article from Spectrum Culture.
Yes, yes, that's the one. Yeah. I wanted to talk about for sure.
Yeah, so they ordered it. Bloom, The Butcher, Morning Mr. Magpie, The Daily Mail, Little by Little, and then threw in These Are My Twisted Words.
No,
it's like a song from 2 years before. Lotus Flower, Staircase, Codex, Give Up the Ghost, Super Collider, and Separator, and then it's like, and I'm leaving off Feral because fuck Feral. But I saw that a lot, and I never really thought that this was a thing, you know? But I saw the interesting thing is that I saw a lot of different, negative opinions. Like, not all the negative opinions were the same, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like not like everyone's like, this album sucks because of this.
Blank.
It's like very, all over the place.
That's why I think it's such an interesting album, and it's like so important for Radiohead because it elicits so many different responses, right? It's so mysterious. It's so, people are coming at it from so many different ways. To be like, to dismiss it,
yeah,
would be to dismiss Radiohead in general, right? Because it's so to the core of there was a lot leading up to this album. This album didn't come out of nowhere, right? The style and the genres, etc.
Oh, I thought you meant like in terms of Radiohead talking about it. I was like, no, it came out of fucking nowhere. They're like, hey, we got an album tomorrow. Yes, yes, and I was like,
that did. But I mean, like their evolution kind of, it came to that point. It wasn't like this was completely out of left field. But in some ways it was because of how, which I did want to like mention too, a little bit of like how they recorded it and put it together. This one quote says, the album was recorded in a strange way. The band members would play their parts, then cut and sample them, editing and looping the songs into existence in a process. York compared that to of editing a film. So, this other quote says, this is why people find the music on King of Limbs compressed, flat, inert for all its hyperactive movement, which is interesting.
Yeah, and just to give some citations, since you're not, that's from Stereogum's defense of King of Limbs. Yes.
Thank you.
Article that actually came out like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Which it's interesting. There was a lot of different articles from from when it came out and from now, 10 years later.
Now, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like when I was reading that, I was like, "Oh, film editing." But then they point out that, like, maybe that's why people don't like it.
Yeah. Some people,
Why some people? Mm. It's a subject that's really fascinating to me. Because I have my own problems with it too. Sometimes I think that I don't like the song "Morning, Mr. Magpie," or maybe it just shouldn't come after "Bloom." I think that's maybe where it happens for me. I do completely agree that Super Collider should have been on it. Super Collider is like one of their most amazing songs.
It's such a good song. It's on the From the Basement, you know? Like, I mean, it's a bonus track, but it's still on there. They decided to put it on there. That and Daily
and I guess also Daily Mail.
And Staircase.
But again, and The Butcher. I fucking love The Butcher.
The Butcher on here? It's not on here, no.
Oh, sorry. I just in general, in terms of B-sides. I think that, like, I don't know where they would go in the track listing, but
I
should have been on there.
I kind of like this guy's, we've talked about Spectrum Culture, his track listing, except for the getting rid of Feral. I would literally just get rid of These Are My Twisted Words and put Feral back in, and I really like this track listing, you know? To go from Bloom to The Butcher to Morning Mr. Magpie, Daily Mail, Little by Little, I think it was a really interesting progression. And then getting Staircase between Lotus Flower and Codex, I think is interesting. And then Super Collider into Separator is, I think, really cool. I think that would be a, a fuller album and really, really cool.
Yeah. Except for the fact, wait, how is the sequence? Do they break up? Even though I just said it out loud, I forgot if they break up, Codex give up the ghost.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they break up the oh, right, Codex give okay. the ghost into a separator, which is like, especially in Stereogum's initial In Defense and their recent 10 years of, it's two different writers. Both clearly talk to each other because they use some of the same sort of phrases. But that's like one of the best like lineups of their songs of all time.
I think that's correct. Yeah,
they both refer to like Codex and Give Up the Ghost as the dark night of the soul, followed by a sunrise that is a separator.
Unbelievable! And that's actually, such a great description.
Yeah, completely. And Consequence of Sound also had a was talking about it, that publication. And the person who wrote that had some really interesting insights into like comparing what these songs sounded like. And he says that Separator was like a Stevie Wonder song. And I would have never thought that, but now I want to hear Stevie Wonder cover Separator.
Yes.
Like somehow, like, I don't even know, but like that just like literally blew my mind.
Yeah.
But in terms of just that sort of like lightness, it is like a sort of shining Stevie Wonder song.
I mean, it's probably the brightest, you could say, Radiohead song there's ever has been.
Well, definitely on that album.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely on the album. But I don't know. Like, ever? Maybe. You might be right. It's definitely their lightest ending song.
Yes. Sure. Oh, absolutely. For sure. For sure. Yes. I mean, you compare that with like the album prior to that and like Videotape. You're like, oh, Jesus Christ, night and day.
Yeah.
In terms of mood.
And True Love Waits too.
Oh yeah. 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 What a crazy sandwich that's a separator is. Oh, wow. I didn't think about that. Jesus. Like you said, there's a lot has been written since its release, you know, now in 10 years. And I think for the most part, these articles are saying like over time it has for to them, they've seen it, you know, with fonder light and really realize like how great the album is. You know, obviously they talk about its faults and here and there. The Stereogum one that talks about it, you know, the one that recently came out has some interesting, like it says, I like this whole thing of the whole idea of this album was to have something that was almost not existing, which is a really interesting look at this, especially when they talk about, you know, the newspaper edition and this and that, how it just like, you know, sort of like mutates and evolves and like decay, you know, is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, my newspaper album is yellowing. Like, I busted it out, and Stanley Donner talked about how he liked that newspaper yellows, and like he said, as we all do. But and I like busted mine out, and it's definitely like it's turning like it looks like an old newspaper. It's 10 years old.
Yeah. But it's cool that my favorite. I think at the end of the article, he says, I'm glad they documented their struggle to transform rather than end the band. At this late date, coming up on 5 years since their last EP, this much is clear. Better to be flummoxed by new Radiohead than to have no new Radiohead at all. And I mean, that's a great way to kind of like sum it up. Like, yes, some people be like, oh, it's their worst record, whatever. But it's like, but we got, regardless of how you feel about the whole album, there's everyone I think has something they can pull from that record that they like, you know, I think regardless.
Yes, completely.
You know, Lotus Flower was, you know, big thing. Bloom is, like you said, in is the best song off the record and one of the greatest things they've ever done. I was going to ask you, what is your favorite version of Bloom? Cause I feel like at this point there's like so many different versions of it.
Damn, that's a really hard question.
It's a tough question.
Actually, I really like the album version. That might be my favorite.
Nice.
Because it has, because the live version doesn't have the strings.
That's true.
And this, the like Hans Zimmer version is
little,
like not a Radiohead song.
Yeah, yeah, it's a Hans Zimmer song.
I still really like it.
Yeah.
I forgot that it was actually inspired by by Blue Planet itself, and then was in Blue Planet too.
Full circle. I love it.
That makes sense.
I love that.
But yeah, no, I think the album version is
nice.
My favorite. Yeah. What about you?
I would say I like that version Tom did by himself in the Electric Lady Studio. Yeah, that's like,
yeah,
so good. And then, but then also ties with the like the From the Basement version is also really great. It's when they have the horns and everything. It's so fucking good. Yeah.
You need like the horn. Yeah, exactly. You need all horn. Of it. You need all of the different.
You need all of it. But it's interesting. What a lot of the articles also said, is that, which I wanted to like kind of talk to you about, saying that because the King of Limb, the Lotus Flower music video was so ridiculous, and like it created like it was like meme fodder, that it sort of undermined the album. What do you think about that?
Which is, I had never even heard that take until reading these articles.
Same.
I was like, I thought that it actually made them more popular, at least with like the people. I was taken aback by that, frankly. And it's even in Brooklyn Vegan's write up of, you know, in defense, or not in defense, but reevaluating King of Limbs, that they say that Morning Magpie, or Morning Mr. Magpie, should have been the single, and that like Lotus Flower became derided because it was a meme. I was like, by whomst? Like, what?
I think there's some
people know.
Who
I was
I think yeah I think some people see meme making, etc., as sort of negative rather than people taking in a community sort of creating
belittling.
Yeah. Whereas I don't think it was that. I think it was people, it was there's parts of it that are kind of funny and ridiculous. And it's, I think it's sort of sharing in the joy and like in the community and like being like, oh, this is funny. Isn't this interesting? And like, I don't see it that way, but I don't know. Maybe like there's some people in certain media and like who write about things who don't think, see it as like a, ugh, these people are looking down upon this thing, you know? Or I see it as celebrating. I see it as celebrating it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very taken aback by that. And yeah, and even in Stereogum's album Turns 10 thing, they said that, like, it proved that they had, like, it didn't counteract the notion that Radiohead were finally as far up their own asses as their haters had always believed. I'm like, really? How did it? What? This is all new to me.
Yeah.
Like, I was so, like, even in, like, how I thought I had heard every take on King Limbs at all, you know, but apparently not. But what's interesting to me is that, like, I think a lot of these reevaluations seemed as confused as I feel, because they're like, there was a publication called Albumism speaking about it. And they say, and yet I have this feeling that the King of Limbs is important. It should be written about. Its black sheep status makes it interesting. The only problem is that these anniversary retrospectives are supposed to be somewhat positive, and I'm not even sure that I like this album. Like, so everyone seems to be kind of confused. They're like, do I, like that person, there's like, I don't know if I like it. But whereas other ones that are like literally in defense, they also like don't really know how, like what they're defending or like why they're, what the
so
problem
funny.
Is.
Yeah.
Which leads to the whole murkiness of the album itself.
Yeah. Well, it's also, and I think it was in some of the articles mentioned, and it's a fair point to make, is that this is because we're comparing it to Radiohead's prior work, all of their
exactly.
all their other albums, and so like they even said, like, if someone else released this record, it'd be like, you know, everybody would be gushing about it, be album of the year, etc. But it's when you compare it to, you can compare OK Computer, whatever. Even like you look at the record that came right before it, In Rainbows. Very, I think, in some a lot of ways, very different record. So
Completely.
what do we, how are we evaluating, art in general? It's interesting to think to look at, like, if you take it for what is it? Or are you gonna,
Well, it's
are like,
impossible to
what?
take it for what it is,
Yeah,
unfortunately.
right? Yeah, it's not, and it's not made
That's
in
the
a
problem.
vacuum. So you have to, in a way, like, what did they do before this? What is, like, no, this record is not Kid A. No, this record is not OK Computer. But this is, it is King of Limbs. It is a record that was made differently. You can say to some degree that it is more experimental than Kid A, because with Kid
Well,
A,
that's
they
what
were all in the
Brooklyn
same
Vegan
room.
says.
Yeah, it's they for Kid A, they were at least, yes, some of the songwriting was like weird and radical, but they were playing, for the most part, playing together as you normally would when you record an album. You know, in the recording studio, you weren't looping it with a software that one of the band members created. So in that sense, this is their most experimental
Which
record.
I forgot that Johnny wrote the software.
Yeah,
Fucking
like,
crazy.
that's a big fucking deal. That's crazy that he did that.
Well, Brooklyn Vegan even compares like okay, compares it to Kid A, saying that like and that it's a more interesting album than its predecessor, and like in the chat and th that there's still not much that sounds like it, they say. And
Yeah.
likewise, there still hasn't been much music like the King of Limbs in the 7 years since it came out. Obviously, it's an old article, but
Yeah. Yeah.
like it's almost more. Yeah, it's like what you were saying. It's almost more experimental.
Yeah.
But and also to what you were saying right before
Yeah.
that, in Stereogum's The King of Limbs Turns 10, they say the brevity between albums might have been over, or sorry, the brevity of the album might have been
Yeah.
overlooked if The King of Limbs had not contained the fussiest, most grayscale music of the band's career. In 2007, after more than 4 years, the band had rewarded the public's patience with the warm, approachable In Rainbows, the closest thing to fan service they've ever released. And I was
That's
like, that's
interesting.
what it is. I think that's the
Yeah.
key. It's the
Yep.
fan, fan In Rainbows was fan service. Not in
Absolutely.
necessarily a bad way, but it was.
No,
And so I was
absolutely.
kind of like, I'd be like, if you're watching like some like Marvel, and then you like watch Twin Peaks The Return or something.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, like it's like these are things that like want to do what the fans want, and then you go to David Lynch and he's like, I literally couldn't give two shits about what you think. I'm gonna do some like abstract shit for like 7 minutes.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. I
Yeah.
mean,
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
so
But
if it hadn't come after In
in Rainbow.
Rainbows, it might have been
Perceived
taken completely
differently.
differently. And but
Absolutely,
again,
you're
like we don't
absolutely right.
know. We'll never know that.
We never know. Because you could say that this was maybe a reaction to In Rainbows. So then
Well, yeah,
therefore it
especially
had to.
the fact that they didn't want to write a full traditional album
Yeah. Like what someone
after
said,
making In Rainbows.
I wrote down something, two EPs stitched together, four song arcs that played off one another. I think that's from the Stereogum maybe. Which is an interesting way to put it. But regardless, I do think that it's an interesting thing to think about, like, so, this is, we could go into this like philosophically or whatever, like conceptually, what are song, like where do songs exist? Because the whether you like the album versions or the from the basement versions, you like those songs.
Or like the stadium versions, which
Yeah.
are almost kind of a different vibe, than the
So
from the basement.
then to call that album like the worst album is like, but you can, the songs exist outside the album, right? So if you like the King of, if you like From the Basement, then you can say you like those songs because it's just different. It's just how they're presented. I don't know. It's an interesting, like, sort of like, it's getting almost like conceptual down the rabbit hole of like
Oh,
where do they exist?
completely. Yeah.
Because I sort of am leaning in the camp where I do love the Live from the Basement, because I watch right before we record. I watch the whole thing. I have it on DVD and Blu-ray. And I was like, oh my God, these are the where the songs live. This is where they flourish.
Yeah.
For me, because you see them doing it live, because they're playing off one another. You have two drummers. You have Clive there, and they're performing so well. And Tom's voice sound, his performance is he's doing such a fantastic job.
I mean, in the defense art, in the Stereocom defense from a couple of years ago, they say those choppy 2D loops become these polyrhythmic monsters live. Melodic flourishes come to the fore where they were buried on the recording. Grooves become paramount. These really become dance songs of a sort when you see them on stage. And suddenly York's crazy lotus flower flailing doesn't seem so crazy after all.
Yeah.
And that is very true.
Yeah.
That is definitely key. It's hard to like create a coherent answer to like what's wrong with the album or if anything is wrong at all.
I think it is like the way they made it. It's literally just playing in the room with people versus creating something on your own and then putting it together. That's literally the difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's really it. Like they experimented doing it a certain way and then
I think that's the best answer, but it's interesting to see how many people just don't like that type of music. Is fine. And you cannot like that type of music.
Yeah.
Which is why then music criticism just becomes opinions, which is also fine. Like, but it's weird to like delineate, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like why is your opinion of this? Is it because of this reason or that reason? You know, like,
yeah,
this is why this subject is so fascinating to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, no,
where's my stupid NYU course that I teach?
I'm sure fan
reaction.
Right? I'm sure someone's teaching that already. If not,
my god, I'm sure.
But controversial
albums.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But one thing I want to take definitely, I think, is a great sort of like way to end this sort of discussion since we're running a little long. As at the end of the Brooklyn Vegan article, is it the end? Yes, the end of the article. They say, but Radiohead are putting this music in the hands of thousands of people who may go their entire lives without hearing a band like Mel Kimby or Burial.
Yeah,
the King of Limbs is like David Bowie introducing the mainstream to ambient music on low. Mm-hmm. It's a risky move for such a popular act, and it's a major exposure for a type of underground music that deserves it. Even some of the most more universally loved radio albums cannot say they do that.
Exactly, which ties back into in Rainbows' fan service.
There you go. Yeah. And that's really it. That's, I think, a great sort of like summary, great bookend to this discussion, which will continue, obviously. But
of course,
at least for today, for this podcast, I think it's a great way to put it.
I do want to say, however, I do want to say, however, I had a revelation. Something was finally revealed to me because of the like New York State music article about it. They referred to something that came with the newspaper edition as blotter paper. And I was like, hold up, you mean the thing that I've been like, why did they give me acid this whole time and no one fucking explained it to me? I was like, this looks like acid, but it's clearly not. Yeah. I didn't know that like it's just blotter paper and like that's a thing that's used and people use it to make acid.
Yeah.
Like, no, I saw not one article at the time that explained that. I remember posting on Facebook about it being like, so did Radiohead just give us acid? Like, what is happening?
Do we know if it's acid or not?
I mean, maybe, but I did finally.
Now's the time. Let's do it. Let's do it, Christina, right now.
I did finally find a quote from Stanley from an article at that time that I could have read, where he talks about like the guy who like was who had just died, who was like one of the most famous LSD manufacturers, and he was like using blotter paper, and he wanted to like shout that out. I was just like, oh, so the information has been available to me this whole time. But for some reason, it's been this like 10-year mystery that I've been like, what? It's just normal blotter paper, which has a lot of uses, including that.
What are the other uses?
But I was glad to have that mystery solved. Art. It's been used since like Babylonian times. It's like, if so ink doesn't go through. So because it absorbs the ink, so you're not messing up what you're writing on.
Got it.
The more you know.
The more you know. I hope everyone learned something today. I hope everyone learned something today. We're here for a public service. That's our talking about King of Limbs. Again, I'm sure there'll be more discussions about it in the future. Let us know your thoughts too, social media, etc. What you think. I'm sure you'll have
the technique. Let us know if you find it. Yeah. And let us know if you find it as fascinating as we do. The whole controversy.
Yeah. I wanted to one thing as we're we're finished talking about King of Limbs. Now it's the beginning of the year 2021. Do we have any predictions? Radiohead wise, there's not for any other shit going on, but Radiohead wise, what do we think is going to happen in 2021? Oh, we should say that the tours are all canceled, like Tom's tour.
Oh yeah,
all canceled. Single tier.
Colin's book tour.
Colin's book.
Kaput. I don't know. Still hoping for the box. It would be Kid May, Amnesiac? Right?
Yeah, Kid Amnesiac. Yeah.
Could be May. Could be. But other than that, I don't know. I don't think they're recording together. I don't think. No. I think they're in a standstill, just like everything else. You know.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I don't. I definitely am not expecting new Radiohead music. I know Ed is working on stuff. I've seen here and there. He might have new music, or if not this year, probably next year. But he's definitely working on stuff. And we obviously know what Johnny's up to. But I definitely think I'm hoping and praying with all my might that we're getting some sort of Kid A Amnesiac anniversary release, something. Yeah. There has to be. I just feel like there's so many little signs that can't be ignored. And just my general optimism, my ridiculous optimism, that thinks that something's coming.
Also, it's just like all the best stuff would be on this.
Oh my god!
Not all the best stuff, but you know, like all these like because. Amnesiac is such a B-side heavy album as well.
Yeah.
Having that all in one collection would be just...
Oh, so great.
The best.
Oh, and just imagining like a box set, like if it was just Amnesiac, like the book, like a big like red book or something. They would do something really cool art-wise with it, I think would be really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Stanley.
Yeah,
come
well, on. Yeah, that's my prediction. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's probably all. I don't think, like I said, anything else is going to happen this year with them. Who knows?
Yeah.
So there's something I wanted to do last time that I did not get to do that I'm very excited about. It's a new little segment that I came up with. It's a little game. We'll try this for a little bit. Christina, are you ready for Tom tweets or Boomer Facebook post?
I mean, how is that different? He's a boomer.
Yeah. Oh, so no, he's
wait,
Gen
no,
X.
Or
he's Gen X.
He's Gen X. X. What am I saying? Whatever. Old. The olds are all the same.
Yeah. If you're not Gen Z, you're old. It's exactly what it sounds like. I'm gonna read you a phrase or something. And you got to have to tell me, is it a tweet by Tom York or something an actual old person, a boomer, posted on Facebook? Are you ready, Christina?
Oh, my God. Yes, I can't wait.
All right. First thing is oven ready, dot, dot, dot. That's it.
Ooh,
oven
I think
ready.
That was, I think that was dot, Tom. Dot, dot.
Correct. Ding. Correct.
I follow him on Twitter.
I try to go back far so you maybe couldn't remember. All right. Click paste. Just the phrase click paste.
Oh. I don't know. I'm still going Tom.
Wrong. That is an old person on Facebook, a boomer on Facebook. Again,
trying to copy
like...
and paste something perhaps.
Yeah.
that could easily be a Tom, like Tom York, like lyric tweet.
Yeah. Oh, I picked these out very, very specifically. all right, here's another one. Enough already about chickens. enough already about chickens.
It's not Werner Herzog. doesn't he have a thing about chickens? He has a weird quote about chickens.
About looking into their eyes and you can see like the universe or something. Their cold indifference like, of the universe.
Yeah, yes.
Of the chicken. Yeah.
Wait, so what is the actual thing? What is he? What is the
enough,
quote?
Enough already about chickens.
I don't know. I'm just going to go Tom again. Seems vaguely familiar.
That is a boomer on Facebook. a boomer on Facebook. All right, I'm going to do just a few more. This one's one of my favorites.
This is great. Love it.
Hi, Ed.
No, I think that's a boomer on Facebook.
Yeah, it's a boomer on Facebook. I had to throw that one
out. That's not inscrutable enough.
Yeah. All right. Let me think. Here's a good one. I'm in a room full of robots.
That was Tom.
Yes, Tom.
Yay.
Tom. That's a Tom tweet.
I didn't realize I like remember his tweets stick out in my head.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one.
That's a classic Tom.
Yeah, that's a classic Tom. I mean, robots. Yes, that is classic Tom. Double scoops for everyone.
That was Tom as well, right?
Yep. I like that one.
I remember being really excited about that.
yeah, that's true. let me get another one here. Just a couple more. What does satire mean? What does satire mean?
I think that's a boomer.
Correct.
I don't have him.
It's a boomer.
I would have been sad if that was Tom.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could have been a sarcastic thing, like what does satire mean?
Sure.
Like, you know, like
retweeting some idiotic politics thing. Yeah
exactly.
But I didn't have like an attached memory to it, so.
Yeah. All right. Let me do one or two more. Zed.
Just Is that Z E D or just the letter Z?
Good. Z E D. It's spelled out. Z E D. Zed.
I'm gonna say that's a boomer.
Yes, it is. It's a boomer. It's very inscrutable. All right.
Are these boomers
more.
You know?
Yes, these are all, no. I think I went, you know what I got? I should say where I got them. I think I mainly got them from old people on Facebook, the Twitter account, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do one more. This land of opportunity.
Tom. Yeah?
Correct.
I
was not keeping score, but I'm going to say
you got like one or two wrong. Yay.
Yeah, I think you won. You
all right, well, I'll have to find. I have to find some for next time. I will find some weird things. The problem is that the only account I like that I follow is Cursed Conspira Boomer Memes, and it is the darkest shit. It is all screenshots of like conspiracy theories from Boomer Facebook groups, and some of it, man, it's bad. It's bad. Some of it's funny, and some of it's like, oh no. No.
My favorite is I found something recently, like there's people saying like doing things like this will make the liberals mad. Have you seen some of those? Like weird shit, like how like putting like cheese on some meal, it's like this will make the libs angry. It's like what?
Make triggered.
The libs cry.
I'm very
drinking
liberal tears.
Yeah, but it's like it's just so weird. Yeah. It's like how is that? Like what do you think will make it's so weird. I saw that on Twitter recently. It's wild.
Depending on what they're grating cheese on, maybe it would make me cry, but you know.
Yeah, but it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that like weird. It was just like some chicken, I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Or it was like some yeah. It's like okay, cheese, you know what? Cheese improves most things, so I'm not that angry.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? So that
well,
was
thank
our
you. Thank you boomers yeah. and thank yeah. you Tom
yes that was our first round, hopefully not the first time we play
oh no
Tom tweet or boomer Facebook post.
My high score brought to you by my photographic memory.
Yeah.
I literally was like I think I just like remembered it as images, I guess. I don't know. Amazing. I don't have a perfect photographic memory, but
when it comes to Tom's tweets, you do.
Apparently, you know.
Yeah. He's it's important. He doesn't tweet often enough, at least lately, for it to be like missing any tweets.
Exactly.
All right, so we have to end the episode with everyone's favorite segment, Sans Sommelier, where we pair Radiohead songs with very specific situations, like a sommelier pairs wine with food virtually now. Okay, Christina, what do you have for me?
So you, like, I don't know, you read the news, you're watching the news, you get an alert on your phone.
Okay.
And it's like, all clear. No more Rona. Everyone's fine. You can do whatever the fuck you want. It's the purge. No, I'm kidding. You can do anything now. It's all good. Everyone's not sick. No masks. Burn all your masks. Go outside. Let's party. Ooh. Is there a Radiohead song for that?
I think maybe it's because we were just talking about it, but. And how we talked about separator, I feel like.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
But also, but then it also makes it.
Oh no!
Dark, because
if you think this is over, then you're wrong.
Wrong. So I think it does fit.
Damn. Yeah, no, that's really good, actually.
Yeah, I think it's perfect fit.
It's it's like the SpongeBob 2 months later.
yeah, exactly.
It's like COVID's back.
Yeah, it's back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Christina, I think my situation is basically the same thing, but I'm going to say it anyway. You get your second dose of your vaccine shot, and then you walk outside into the sunshine, and then you rip your mask off like Trump did when he came back from the hospital.
God. That's the sitch.
Yeah.
Ripping your mask off after the second vax.
I did the second batch. So it's not exactly the same, but.
Weirdly, the first thing that popped into my head was lucky.
Because
it's sort of like triumphant, but like, it's sort of triumphant in a way, but not a really happy way. Like, it's like things aren't over yet.
But it's also got that
searing guitar solo.
Like you survived a plane crash, so it's like really catastrophic, and you survived. I think that's a good way to put it. You survived a pandemic. This song song brought to you by coronavirus. that's where our head's at, right? I hope everyone out
better.
There.
Yay.
I hope everyone out there is staying safe, masking up. Doing what you can. Hope you can get your vaccine as soon as possible. I'm getting my first dose next week. I'm very excited for that. Nothing in my life is going to change after that, but
it's a start.
It's a start. I'm very excited for. I'm going to go to Javits Center to do it. I'm going to go dress up
Lenny
like
Kravitz
like,
Center.
Yeah. I'm gonna dress up like it's Comic-Con since it's a convention center. I'm gonna go wearing my Spider-Man's outfit. And then go to Times Square directly afterwards.
Sounds like exactly what you should do.
Yeah. But please stay safe out there. And in the meantime, you know, rate, review the podcast.
Subscribe if you haven't.
The numbers on Spotify have been great. At this point on Spotify, let me just bring this up real quick, 112 followers. Thank you, everyone. Hundreds
of listeners.
And
that's just Spotify.
It's great. And it's like worldwide audience. It's fantastic. Thanks you for everyone who's listening. I'm going to shout out, obviously, US, UK, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, Malaysia, Italy, Israel, Portugal, Ireland. That's our top 10 countries on Spotify, baby.
Zang.
Yeah. So thank you all for listening. And hopefully we'll have this is something radio will do something, and we'll do another episode.
Because they just keep doing things. And if not, the news keeps on, the pile keeps on growing, so.
The pile keeps on going. I think there's a couple things we didn't do, and I have some things we can do for, there's some other little fun treats for next time.
Exactly.
So, get ready for that.
Yeah. All right.
Alrighty.
Well,
if you think
bye.
if you think it's over. You're wrong. It's not over.
Then you're
we
wrong.
We have another hour. We have another hour planned. I forgot to tell you. All right. Let's get into the B sides now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And click.
Bye.
Bye.